Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. All right, we're talking with Chris Smith of the North Coast State Forest Coalition. And Chris, to start out with, can you tell us what that is? What is the coalition?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. The North Coast State Forest Coalition is a group of nonprofit organizations based in Northwest Oregon who advocate for the balanced management of the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forests. So we are made up of fishing groups and science fish advocacy groups and kind of the economic angling groups and also conservation groups. And we want to ensure that the 500,000 acres of the Tillamook and Clatsop are managed appropriately to protect those values that aren't represented by timber.
Mm-hmm. And looking at your website, I noticed you have a long list of supporters at this point, but it seemed like your core group was very fishing-oriented. Is that kind of how it started out?
Yeah, very fish-oriented. So our core members are the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, Northwest Guides and Anglers Association, the Wild Salmon Center, the Association of Northwest Steelheaders, and the Sierra Club. So, you know, four of those five groups are very invested in fish and fishing and fish access and economics, and also the Sierra Club is, you know, invested in wildlife habitat and protection as well. So fish are a core feature of our message.
And making sure the environment and the forest supports the fishery as well.
Yeah, supports the fishery and the habitat needed to propagate those fish.
Well, recently the coalition sent out an email to supporters asking people to write to the governor about what you characterized as the Oregon Department of Forestry's clear-cut plan. Can you tell me about that? Now, you're referring to what, the draft?
Yeah, so in mid-February, the Oregon Department of Forestry presented to a subcommittee of the Board of Forestry a draft document that would have kind of formed the background or the starting point of a new forest management plan. And the Department of Forestry, I think, envisioned that this document would be endorsed by the Board of Forestry and move forward as kind of a fundamental piece of this planning process. And when we were looking over that draft document, we saw not a balanced approach to forest management, not a conservation gain in any way, but a very lopsided approach that would see extensive increases in clear cutting on the North Coast State Forests and very little in terms of non-timber benefits. So to our mind, it was not a good step forward by the department. And since then, they've backed off that a little bit. But, you know, we think the conversation needs to be a bit more complicated and nuanced to include those other features that the forest provides.
I was kind of surprised when I read the plan that the first part of it is pretty open about the fact that the one of the problems they're trying to solve, and the one they mentioned first, is to increase revenue for the Department of Forestry. That, they refer to 2008 when, you know, everything sort of went down in terms of the economy and houses weren't being built and lumber prices went down, and that really hurt their budget. Because most of their budget comes from cutting of timber, right?
Yeah, almost their entire State Forest Division budget comes from timber receipts.
And so they talked a lot about that and about needing to adjust the plan because the Department of Forestry was no longer economically feasible, that it was actually spending more money than it was making. And this was a means then of increasing the revenue for the Department of Forestry.
Right. So this whole planning process was actually prompted by the department and the Board of Forestry coming to the realization that they were running a deficit. And as you noted, this began in kind of 2008, 2009 with the market crash. And so over the last 5 or 6 years, the number that the department is in shortfall has actually fluctuated a bit. 2 years ago, it was supposed to be at about $5.5 million per year, and this latest document shows that they want $10 million a year extra. So it is, it's a difficult proposal because the department is trying to increase their revenue from the resource that they manage. So it's a conflict of interest in that regard. And you have to assume that, you know, this forest provides all these benefits to all Oregonians, and perhaps there are other sources of revenue for the department to be able to manage that land so that it can continue to meet all those values.
Have any other sources been identified? Because that does seem awkward, that this agency that is supposed to protect the forest and provide for the greatest benefit for a number of different uses gets its revenue from one particular use, and that is the cutting of the trees. What other possible sources of revenue are there for them?
Well, there's a few ideas. The Department of Forestry actually contracted out with a group called Eco Northwest to run an assessment of alternative revenue sources a few years ago. And that assessment is available online on the Department of Forestry website. And it actually identified several possibilities that were kind of low implementation costs and potentially high revenue sources of income. So those included user fees or right-of-way fees, increased kind of partnering with private entities that use the forest for recreational means. So that document is still out there and floating around, but it doesn't seem to have garnered much attention from the department. The other major source of funding is, the Oregon General Fund, which is, a large pot of money, and it wouldn't take a whole lot of that fund to be contributed to the department to make the department whole and allow them to manage the land for the people of Oregon in a balanced manner.
Mm-hmm. In an ideal world, I guess we would want none of their revenue to come from a particular part of what they're managing. I don't know how practical it is to divorce them entirely from that, but that would be the perfect world scenario where they wouldn't be benefiting from any particular part of it, whether it was cutting trees or recreation or whatever it happened to be.
Yeah, I guess that is true in an ideal world. Or you could, increase the amount of timber you're getting off a forest without social and economic losses. But in the real world, those are factors. I think the reality is that the department is going to be largely reliant on timber revenue for the foreseeable future. And that's, it's awkward, but it's important to the North Coast economy. And there's a lot of jobs that are coming out of that industry. But I think you're right. It's only one piece of the puzzle, and the puzzle needs to be expanded and complicated.
Well, one of the arguments they make in the draft is that in order for them to do their overall job of protecting the resource and protecting recreation and so on, they need to have enough budget to have enough people to do it. So they need the more money to be able to do their larger job. And so there's kind of a catch-22 almost.
Yeah, it's very circular. They need more money to do things aside from timber, but also they need more money to line up more timber sales so that they can make more money to line up more timber sales. So, the department does a lot of stuff. They do, important work that benefits not just the timber industry, but largely what they're doing is lining out timber sales. So it is circular, and I think you're right, it's a catch-22.
Well, and we're talking about the Clatsop and Tillamook State Forests. I mean, that's the area of concern that you have, right?
Right.
What is your position, Chris, with the coalition?
So I coordinate the North Coast State Forest Coalition. I began as a field organizer in Washington County, and at this point I kind of coordinate our efforts both in Washington County, but also up here in Clatsop County and Tillamook County as well. And so I just try to make sure we're all on the same page and expressing the voices of our supporters as best we can.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you opposed to logging in general? Are you opposed to timber cutting?
No, we support an ongoing sustainable timber enterprise. A number of our supporters are linked to the timber industry, or they have, jobs that come from wood manufacturing. We are not opposed to logging. We think that in an ideal world, that there will be an ongoing timber harvest. And it will create those important jobs and revenue for the North Coast, but it has to be done in ways that make sense, in places that make sense, and on a scale that makes sense.
Well, in reading the draft, it's pretty clear that what was being proposed is a sort of a 70%, 30% divide, where 70% of the forest would be for harvest, and 30% would be to handle other conservation issues. Is the percentage divide there part of what you're objecting to? Also, when I read the draft, I didn't see some of the things that you're referring to in terms of the massive clear cutting and so on. So tell me a little bit about where that's coming from and how those conclusions are drawn.
Sure. So it's not just the percentage that we're opposed to, although that's kind of alarming. So just to give you a little context, under the current management plan for these forests, about 48% is not accessible for clear cutting. So that can be harvested in terms of selective harvests and thinning, but it can't be clear cut. So that leaves 52% of the landscape open to clear cut currently. Mm-hmm. In the draft proposal that ODF provided, if you actually are given the data files, which ODF provided us, you're looking at 67% of the forest not only open to clear cutting, but on a 40 to 80 year industrial style clear cut rotation. And on the North Coast, ODF staff have made explicitly clear that it's really 40 to 60 years because the trees are growing so fast. And that includes intensive herbicide spraying and, you know, all the other kind of peripheral ramifications that go along with industrial clear cutting. So it's not just the percentages, but that is a big part. The other problems with the plan is that in that 30% that ODF kind of proposed for conservation, they're including things that aren't now operable for timber. So they're including steep slopes, for example. Those are, you know, those may be providing conservation benefits, but they may not be. And mm-hmm. so they should likely not be included in that allowance.
So the assumption is anything that they're not cutting must be for conservation.
Right.
And that may not necessarily be so.
And that's fraught. And then the third kind of major problem is that in that 30%, they explicitly didn't state that they were going to manage for older forest habitat, which is the rarest form of habitat on the North Coast. So if you look at Google Earth or something on the North Coast, you see a lot of clear-cut patches, and then if you have access to the data, you see a lot of trees that are, you know, 40 to 80 years old following the Tillamook burn. What isn't very present is older forest, and that's crucial to a lot of species here on the North Coast. It's less than 1% of the landscape. So we think that 30% needs to be dedicated to those kind of structures to allow for that kind of habitat to be grown. And the proposal called for kind of a diverse array of habitat, including post-clear-cut habitat. So presumably that's even more clear-cutting than just the 70% would allow.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, a part that had been clear-cut could be designated as a conservation area?
Yeah, it's not explicit in there, but they call for a wide variety of habitat, including early sarrel, which is habitat that has either just all been blown down or all been clear-cut. So that's a concern to us, obviously.
So those percentages could be even more extreme than we're saying, in the sense that if you're counting a clear-cut area as habitat area, you kind of, if you're the tree cutter, you have the best of both worlds. You get to cut it and count it both.
Right.
Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, that's the case. And I don't think a lot of it would be clear-cut necessarily, but some of it certainly could, and others could be, you know, really heavily thinned and not allowed to reach that older forest age. And then that kind of brings about our fourth concern, and that's something that our supporters have been very vocal about over the last few years, is that we want conservation areas that are long-lasting and visible. So we know where they are, they're on maps, they are allowed to grow old, they're not shifted around the landscape as timber harvest requires. And so what we've advocated for is that 30%, if it's 30%, to not only be, you know, managed the right way in terms of older forests, but to be semi-permanent on the map so that it's allowed to grow into that older forest. If you're shifting habitat or, you know, conservation areas around and, you know, you cut one stand and then all of a sudden that's part of your conservation allowance, that's not really doing the job of providing habitat.
Okay, well, clarify that a little bit now. The way this proposal stands, you'd set aside areas for conservation, but they could then later become areas for cutting.
Right, so the language in the proposal calls for the durability implement to be that 70 to 30 ratio. So as long as that 70 to 30 ratio is maintained in this proposal, that's durable enough. if, for example, you know, something catastrophic happened in part of the production zone, a fire, for example, then in this proposal, the department would look to the conservation zone to supplement what was lost in the production zone. And it could happen vice versa, of course. It could be that, you know, a fire happened in the conservation zone, and so something is lost out of the production zone. So both for conservation voices, but also for the timber industry, that durability is really important. And we just don't see that being provided in this document. We see kind of a shifting thing that would not provide the kind of habitat that we want to see.
Well, the 40 to 60 year cycle you mentioned pretty much precludes any old forest at all, does it not?
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, that's all early and early mid-seral forest, which is, you know, which provides habitat for some species, but is not the kind of biodiverse, rich habitat that the North Coast desperately needs.
Hmm. Well, where does that proposal stand now? What's the next step for ODF, or the next step for your coalition, or where does it stand?
Sure. So the board subcommittee did not endorse the proposal based on a lot of the same concerns that we had. And they told department staff to not go back to the drawing board per se, but to go back to stakeholder groups like the timber industry, like the conservation community, like the trust counties, and engage in more of a negotiated process. So this has happened in the past where these groups have come to the table and had these discussions, but then this document didn't really reflect any of the desires of, in this case, the conservation community. So what we would like to see is a document like this not get advanced straight to the board, but come to all the different stakeholders to, you know, have discussions over, have compromises over, and then go to the board for their thoughts. And that didn't happen this time. We're hoping that that's what the department is doing right now, is that they will come to our organization along with others and say, you know, this is what we have in mind. What are your concerns? What do you like about this kind of a proposal?
Well, in reading the draft, they did make reference to a particular stakeholder group that had input in. Is there one stakeholder group that has more influence than another, or how does that work?
So what they're referencing in that document is that was actually a formally convened stakeholder group that had representatives of the conservation community, including two North Coast State Forest Coalition members, the timber industry, several county commissioners, and then a couple citizens at large. So that was actually a group that was convened about 2 years ago now, maybe a year and a half ago, and they met 4 to 6 times, and they had some back and forth discussion about new forest management plans, but that was really a nascent discussion that brought forward a lot of ideas but didn't refine any ideas. So I think the department maybe thought that that was adequate stakeholder input and then went forward with this, you know, 70-30 land allocation proposal. But really, that stakeholder group formed these ideas that were never processed back through the stakeholders after the department did some considerable work.
There was also a reference in the draft to the proposal being sort of examined by scientists and so on. Do you know what that's about?
Yep. So the department also passed along some of those stakeholder proposals to a science review process, and they produced a booklet that reflected some scientific opinions on those proposals and how they would affect various values in the forest. So how they would affect, you know, timber outputs, how they would affect aquatic function, how they would affect landslides, that kind of thing. So that was also a process that happened after the stakeholder group, but that's going to be a process that needs to happen again after the Department of Forestry talks to these other groups and kind of comes up with a nuanced plan.
Well, let's suppose somebody who is listening has some strong feelings about this on either side of the argument, either
sure.
on the harvesting side or the conservation side. What influence can they have? How do they get involved, or who do they talk to?
Sure. Well, if and I just to clarify, there's not just, you know, conservation and harvest. There's also a number of other benefits too. So there's a lot of social things, recreation values. But you can talk to your local county commissioners. They have a voice at that table. You know, Clatsop County receives the most revenue out of any county in the state from state forest lands. Tillamook County, the second most. And both of those counties have important voices in the conversation. So that's one way to do it. If you are of a conservation-minded, then I would encourage you to visit our website, forestlegacy.org. And if you are on the timber side, I think that you're fairly well represented by some Tillamook County commissioners and also the kind of timber lobby that is there. But certainly you could reach out to your county commissioners or your local Department of Forestry staff and, you know, voice your opinions to them.
So. Well, the counties and the school districts are sort of in the same position in a way as the Department of Forestry, in the sense that they're depending on revenues from the forest in order to pay their bills. So there has to be at least some wish that a certain amount of harvesting will take place to refill those coffers, I would guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And the county voice has been not monolithic, but primarily driven to increase timber harvests. And as you noted, they have a good reason for doing that. There's a lot of revenue that's come into the county's general fund, but also the school districts that relies on that timber revenue. And that's part of what's pushing back against this attempt to diversify the department's revenue. You know, if the department is receiving general fund money, well, then the counties are losing a fraction of that. But in the long term, I think that a lot of county North Coast citizens would argue that the long-term benefits of the forest outweigh those short-term benefits.
Well, when we talk about those benefits, now, as you pointed out, we've mentioned the benefits of timber extraction, which brings in money.
Sure.
And we've mentioned the benefits of a habitat that's good environment for plants and animals. But what are some of the other values in the forest that ODF is supposed to be protecting on behalf of everyone? It's the greatest permanent value is the idea, right?
Right. And so the language in the greatest permanent value clause, it references environmental, social, and economic values. So the economic values are fairly obvious. It's primarily timber harvest and the jobs associated with that. But it's also, you know, a number of professional fishing guides who are earning their living from fish that are reared in these state forests and come back there to spawn. So that's one value that doesn't get discussed very often. In terms of social values, we're talking about recreation opportunities, clean air, clean water, clean drinking water. A lot of coastal communities and a lot of communities in Washington County rely on drinking water that's coming off of watersheds in these state forests. And then kind of just the intrinsic value of nature and natural beauty, aesthetic values, things like that. So I think there's really a large suite. And then, you know, in terms of recreation, you're talking about everything from very low impact stuff like, you know, bird watching to very high impact stuff like OHV use in the mm-hmm. forests and everything in between, including consumptive fishing and hunting, hiking, you know, lots of family friendly camping and mountain biking, all those kinds of things. So there's the number of values is really hard to articulate, but it's all out there in the forest, and the forest should be able to provide all of them for all Oregonians.
And OHV refers to
off-highway vehicles.
Yeah. So is there any revenue to be derived from some of those other uses that could go into the budget of the Department of Forestry?
There is. So I referenced earlier this assessment of alternative revenue sources that the department had done. I was rereading that actually over the last couple of days. Talk about dry reading. And some of those sources have high potential for revenue collection for the department, and especially recreation. Right now, the department does not collect a lot of revenue from recreation, and there's a lot of potential for them to do that. And then there's also kind of a peripheral conversation around, you know, consumptive user fees. So there's been talk of maybe you pay, when you get your fishing license, for example, maybe you pay some fee to allow you to fish these North Coast watersheds. Mm-hmm. And that fee then goes to ODF to, you know, hopefully maintain the watersheds for the sake of those fish. So there's all kinds of, you know, ways that you could utilize the the forest users to diversify the revenue.
Is there any kind of contiguous trail that goes through the two forests, any kind of long-distance trail at this point?
There isn't anything like that. There is a very long-term project right now that's being kind of undertaken by an entity called the Salmon Berry Corridor Coalition, and they're looking to link a trail from the Banks-Vernonia Trail in mm-hmm. Washington County all the way out to Tillamook. It's a very, very long-term project. There's a lot of different factors at play, but it's exciting. But in terms of really high-mileage stuff in the state forest, there's not a lot, especially in Clatsop County. In Tillamook, there's a lot of shorter trails and kind of iconic trails, the Kings Mountain Trail or University Falls or the Wilson River Trail. But there's nothing very large, and that's something that we'd really like to see the department maybe focus on if they're, you know, allowed to focus on those other benefits besides timber.
Well, from movies and so on, there seems to be growing interest in long-distance hiking, and there might be another revenue opportunity there.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly you can kind of make your own way through the forest and hop between trails. And something I like to do is you can start pretty high up on the North Fork of the Salmon Berry River and hike and fish and camp all the way down to the mouth of the Nehalem there, which is, I mean, that's a pretty high mileage thing, and you're walking along the historic railroad, and it's, so the opportunities are there to be had, but they're not as maintained or publicized as maybe they ought to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, lastly, where does the coalition get the money to pay its bills? How are you funded?
Well, we're not funded very well. We're nonprofits, and we have very little staff invested in it, but we're funded by foundational and family grants primarily. And also we run a very small fundraising opportunity for our supporters to contribute, but primarily foundational grants.
Great. Well, it seems like people who, who are interested in harvesting timber, it's a very specific, very direct kind of issue where it provides money for certain things, whereas conservation is a more diverse kind of thing. And so people are sort of supporting one side or the other for very different reasons, I would say.
Yeah. And I think, I think it can be a good conversation, too. I mean, like I said, we support an ongoing logging enterprise in the forest. We mm-hmm. think it's important. We want to see healthy counties and healthy schools, but we want to see balance. And so we're hoping to do a good job in representing those kind of amorphous, nebulous, quote-unquote conservation benefits that are, they're more diverse, but they're also a little more difficult to articulate. And so that's part of the battle that we face.
Thanks. We've been talking with Chris Smith of the North Coast State Forest Coalition. Chris, thanks very much.
Thank you.